Welcome to Hype, episode 66. Ooh, 66. That's spooky. It's too bad we're not talking about Supernatural this week, because that's Route 66. Ooh. Anyway, I'm going off track right from the very beginning. My name is Selena, and I'm here with Pam and Marima. Hey, girls.
Hi.
What up?
Hello. It's actually hello, ladies, but it feels wrong to say it when Kyle's not here.
It's because he pretty much is one of the girls.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, he's going to love that. Okay, so Hype is, of course, hypeable.com's podcast all about the latest entertainment news and discussion. This week is a normal show. We've been doing kind of a special normal show interchange the last couple of weeks because we've had so much to talk about on our iTunes feed or on hypeable.com. You will see our Ready Player One special, and last week we released our Merlin special, which was a lot of fun, and we hope you guys have had a chance to check those out. But if you're not a fan of any of those, then hopefully you will enjoy this episode where we'll just be talking about normal news stuff, and we'll spend some time on the Emmys, which were last Sunday. But before we get into that, I just want to remind you of the contact information as always, because, of course, we would love for you guys to contact us and contribute to the show. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype, and you can also find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. Okay, that's it. That's all I got for the intro. So going on to how we hype this week, we're going to tell you what we've been doing in fandom. And I'm going to start with Marima, because you have a lot.
Yeah, that's me.
It's you.
I always have a lot. Let me see. I've done a little bit of everything. So I saw Ricky and the Flash, finally. And
yes.
I loved it.
Did you love it?
Meryl Streep should be in everything, and Sebastian Stan should be in everything.
He should just dance in everything, just in the background,
he's,
you know?
Very attractive.
He's so attractive.
Yeah. I did genuinely really enjoy the film. I think what I liked the most about it was how it kind of doesn't make you judge any of the characters. Like,
yes.
It just kind of presents them. And I think, what's her name? Diablo Cody. I feel like she does that really well in mm-hmm. most of her films.
The characters are so layered, and none of them are perfect, you know? None of them are the hero, but you root for them anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really good. And then I read Why Not Me by Mindy Kaling, which is hilarious and amazing. And I read it on Kindle because my book has still not turned up. I'm becoming concerned. I made the mistake of reading it a bit of it on the train this week. I have this really bad / amazing habit of I like emote very loudly when I read. So like I will laugh out loud. When I read something that's funny, and it, you know, makes other people be like, what's happening? So I was sitting on the book just like giggling to myself reading Mindy Kaling's book, which is a good sign. Really, really, really good. She's very refreshing, I find her. Yeah, she's just like really upfront, and she has a very particular kind of humor that comes across, like you can hear it in her voice, mm-hmm. even in the writing, which is great. So I would definitely recommend that. And then actually today I just was listening to, I don't know if you guys saw, but Ryan Adams released this like entire album cover of 1989 by Taylor Swift. And
yeah,
it's
that's
amazing.
Weird, right? Why did he do that?
It's amazing.
It's
because he's
amazing.
Awesome.
But is he allowed to do that? Like it's so weird.
She's down. She's into it.
Okay.
Yeah, and she'll get royalties and stuff from the songwriting. And anyway, music copyright is not interesting to anyone. But it's so good. The thing I find really funny about this is how people are like, now this is real music. This is a real song. And it's like, dude, it's the same song. Like, the only reason that these covers are so good is because the original was a good song in the first place. So, yeah, I love Taylor Swift. Her recent stuff more so. I like the kind of pop vibe that she's got going on now. I really love 1989, as Pam knows. And I really, really love this, though. And so I'm going to get this whole album and just alternate them, I think, and just listen to like one and then the other, and then just do that for the rest of my life. So I'm all set.
That's good.
Improve your life plans. Those are good plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I'm going to talk about something a little different, but about Why Not Me. I'm almost done with it. I'm listening to the audiobook. So we kind of have that, like, difference.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's funny because I do have the same as you. Like, I'll be walking around, like, down the street or, like, in my apartment and I'll just laugh out loud at something because it's so funny. Like, just all of a sudden she goes on this tangent and I'm just laughing like she's there. It's really great. But actually, in terms of it being an audiobook, I think there are some parts where she reads it a little straighter than... Because she reads it herself, Mindy Kaling. She reads it a little straighter than I would have imagined it had I been reading it like you did. So I feel like a little bit of the humor is lost that way. Because she's reading it very seriously, and it's only after she's finished, I was like, oh, that was a joke.
Oh.
Or she was being ironic there. Oh. Or was she?
Oh.
So that's interesting.
I could see how that could happen.
But it's a really good book. As I said, I'm almost done with it. And I really enjoy reading or listening to these autobiographies where it's the person. Oh my God, I can't speak. I really enjoy listening to the autobiographies where it's the person themselves doing it. That's a okay sentence. B+, I think. Okay, but what I really wanted to talk about, though, was that I have been playing a video game, a PlayStation 3 game called Lollipop Chainsaw. I actually played this once years ago, and it was a lot of fun, and I found it, like, super cheap, and I was like, I'm gonna buy this and check it out, because it's James Gunn made it, who also, of course, did Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just a really fun, like, hack-and-slash zombie game with this girl, like, Buffy-type cheerleader with a chainsaw who runs around, like, killing zombies. It's very... It doesn't grip you the way a game like The Last of Us might do, but I enjoy it. I find it's good for releasing, like, your anger on the world.
Fun.
So, yeah, definitely fun. And if you guys are looking for a new game, check it out. It's for PlayStation 3, and it should be super cheap because it's kind of old now. And Pam, it's your turn.
Yay, it's my turn. I like it when it's my turn. This week I wanted to talk about something James Bond related, which is fitting because we'll be talking about some James Bond news later on in the show. But we got the opportunity to review these brand new Steelbook collections that came out for some of the older films. And these are so cool. So I just wanted to bring this up so that listeners kind of know what's going on with these. So what's going on is that MGM has released 7 of the Bond films in the collector steel book, like steel cased DVD copies, and it's a series of 7 movies, and 3 of them are the ones that Craig has been in, but the other 4, this is like the cool part, is that they all have to do with James Bond's past adventures with the Spectre organization. So if you want to get a little like a little rundown of like James's past run-ins with the organization and how it kind of ties into the history of Bond in terms of the film franchise, this is a really good way to pick those up and just kind of add some old Bond to your DVD collections. And the cases are really, really nice because, as everybody knows, a big part of Bond is like the opening credits and the artwork that goes along with the Bond song that plays before every movie. So all of these steelbooks are actually modeled after the artwork that goes into the opening scenes of the films. So they're really cool on that sense. And my favorite actually is the Casino Royale one because it's got this really cool like blue and red and muted gold theme. And it's like, it has to like a deck of cards motif and stuff like that. So they're just really, really nice if you're looking to add to your collection and you don't own a lot of Bond films, but you want to. It's just a really good way to do that. They're actually only available through Best Buy, unfortunately, but they do retail for only $12.99 US. So it's not that bad if you're thinking like, oh, these are probably going to be really expensive because they're limited edition. Like, they're actually fairly affordable online. So just something to think about. And I think the only thing that I didn't like, and this is just like a small little gripe, is that I thought that they had like the dust jackets for these DVDs, like had like, you know, like they have the information on the back with like the synopsis of the film. And, you know, it usually gives you a little bit more detail and like special features and stuff like that. Like that comes off the packaging so that you can get more of the artwork for the actual DVDs. But I think that would have been nice to include inside, because if you don't know very much about the movie, for example, or you like are forgetful and you're like, oh, what's like on Her Majesty's Secret Service about? Because I don't watch Bond like every week or something like that. That would have been nice to include inside. So pretty much after I got these and opened them, I just kind of cut those up so that they could fit inside the DVD cases, because I feel like if they're in my collection, like, I want somebody that's like browsing to be able to be like, oh, I want to know more about this movie, like, let me open this up, instead of having to ask like Pam, who's all the way over in the kitchen, like, I can just read up on what it's about. But yeah, anyway, really, really nice. So again, if you don't have like any of these in your collection, but you're interested, like, you might want to look at these, because they're really pretty, and they also are probably going to make for really good holiday gifts for like the Bond fan in your life. So just a thought.
Wow. So that's really cool. And thanks to them for sending you that, because I mean, that's a really cool thing to get to review and talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And like I said, like, these are so pretty. Like, we'll put up a picture on the Instagram so you guys can see, but, if you enjoy the artwork, for Bond films and stuff
and I
like
think
that,
honestly, like with the Spectre film coming out, I think that's a really good move to release this, because I think a lot of people, like myself included, sort of like just a casual Bond fan. And so Spectre is nothing that I really pay attention to or know much about. So just to make Spectre seem more exciting, the movie, just going back and exploring the lore, because Sam Mendes did say, I wrote this up recently, that he did say that it's going to be like an origin story for Bond. You know, this one, it's going to really go back and explore his roots. So I think catching up is, it's a good time to catch up on early Bond films.
Yeah. And then just really quickly, I do want to just run through the titles for the ones that do have to do with Spectre, just in case like anybody that's listening is interested. So you have two Connery films. So you have You Only Live Twice and From Russia with Love. And then there's one George Lazenby, which is On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And then one Roger Moore, which is For Your Eyes Only. So it's a really nice mix of old and new Bond.
Cool.
Fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, great. So we've all been doing cool stuff, and we're super excited about lots of interesting things coming up. I'll be, you know, I'm talking about next month, I'm going to London for some BFI stuff, and I'm like, oh, so excited to talk more about that, but I need to sort it all out before I really can get into it. No, are you kidding me? I have worked so hard to make this work, so I'm like super excited. I hope it pays off. And I think New York Comic Con is next month too, so there'll be, we have some people going to that, and we'll bring you more updates as we learn more, maybe try to get some of them on to talk about it actually. But for this week, we of course have a lot of news. The biggest news story was the Emmy Awards, so we're going to change it up and start by talking a little bit about TV. The Emmy Awards for 2015 were last Sunday, and Andy Samberg hosted an eventful show, and I'm sure we all have our favorite moments and most awkward moments and snubs and all of that. So you can read all about who won and who lost on hypeable.com. So basically what we just want to do here in Hype is just to go over which wins we were most excited about and which snubs we were most disappointed about. And I'm gonna let Marima go first again, and I got a feeling I can predict yours.
I bet you can predict both of them, actually. So what I'm most happy about is definitely Viola Davis winning Best Actress.
I was
going to
go for Jon Stewart there, actually. So
No, if anyone's seen my Twitter, they'll see I was very excited about this. So she was the first African-American woman to win this award, which is ridiculous when you think about it. And she just gave the most beautiful speech. This was, of course, for How to Get Away with Murder, which she is amazing in. I don't even really like that show, but I watched most of it just to see her.
She's so good. Yeah.
She's so good in that. Yeah. So she 100% deserved this. Not that it was a weak field by any means, but I don't think anyone is going to disagree that, you know, it should have gone to someone else. But her speech was so beautiful, and, you know, it started a really important conversation that, you know, to be honest, we should have been having anyway. But, you know, she's using this opportunity to talk about that, which I think is fantastic. And then, you know, what I was sad about, obviously, Parks and Rec. I love Parks and Rec. It's definitely, you know, my top favorite shows of all time. And I don't think it's ever won an Emmy, which is really, really sad. It would have been nice for it to get the outstanding comedy series. It would have been nice for Amy Poehler to get it for the final season. Not that Veep isn't deserving. I'm not really into it, but I've seen some of it and it is really funny.
It comes to a point where like Veep and Modern Family and those shows that just keep winning and they're not that great. I'm sorry, but they're not that great. Like, they're good.
Well,
but there are other shows that are
Veep
really
and Modern
good.
Family in the same category. Like, that's quite offensive.
The only reason I do it is because they're the ones terrible. That have won a lot. Like, they keep winning. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, not that they're similar shows, but just that they are, like, every year it's like Modern Family. Modern Family. Like, I'm just saying they might be good, but there are other shows that are doing more revolutionary things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I just mean, like, I don't know if Parks necessarily deserved it over Veep. I couldn't say that because I haven't watched a lot of Veep, but I do think it would have been nice to see it get recognized now that, you know, it's done. I guess the other thing that I was, like, mildly amused about was how many awards Game of Thrones picked up, because that was not a strong season. Like, that wasn't even the best season of Game of Thrones, let alone the best season of TV this year, you know. I think Game of Thrones is definitely one that picks things up just because it's Game of Thrones and it's edgy and, like, that's the thing that everyone watches. And, you know, Peter Dinklage, like, he's great, but what did he do this season?
Yeah,
I can't remember a single thing
that
he did.
That's what I mean. Like, there's just, that's why I think I'm so disillusioned with the Emmys, because it is like they just pick what they think. Like, they're like, oh, this person, like, I recognize this name, or, oh, this guy is consistently good, so I'm just going to vote for him. And I feel like, and that's what I'm basing on. I'm like, what are these, why are they're just picking Veep again just because, like, that's why I'm like, and who even votes? And I'm just like, I don't know, it's a little bit boring.
Well, yeah, I think the Emmys, like you say, are a little out of touch. Like, Orphan Black hadn't been nominated, Tatiana Maslany hadn't been nominated until this year, I think, was the first time, which is ridiculous because she plays like 1,000 characters amazingly, and all critics know that and all audiences know that, but somehow the Emmys didn't know that. So, you know, they're kind of making themselves redundant in a way. But, you know, at the same time, it's always nice, of course, to see your favorite shows or people be recognized. But I don't watch the Emmys. It's not something I would make time to watch because it's on during the morning and I don't care enough. That's all.
I think I got you kind of covered the same ones I was going to talk about. What about you, Pim?
Viola Davis is the big one, but it was really tough for me because, you know, aside from Tatiana Maslany, you also had Taraji P. Henson that was nominated for the lead actress department. And I don't know if any of you guys have been watching Empire, but she does such a good job on that. So I kind of felt like going into it, if either of them had won, it would have been wonderful. You know what I mean? It's nice to see Viola Davis be recognized because she does a really good job with How to Get Away with Murder. But I also enjoyed Taraji's role on Empire, which was a really big show that started up last year. But as far as other people that won that I was really happy for, I think it was probably Uzo Aduba for Orange is the New Black.
Her speech. Oh, yeah. She's amazing.
And I wanted to point out, too, which is, like, it's just a technical thing, and it doesn't apply to, like, all shows. Like, for example, Game of Thrones wouldn't fit into this. But for those of you guys that don't know, there's a certain period of time in which a show has to air in order to be considered. So a lot of these shows, even though they're on their, like, third season, like, for example, Orange is the New Black, like, Uzo Aduba technically would have been nominated for season 2 instead of season 3, because the time period that the Emmys looks at is June 1st through May 31st of the year before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it's very interesting the way that they choose to do this. And I think a lot of people forget that, because I know somebody that said, oh, like, Uzo Aduba, like, her role, like, in Crazy Eyes wasn't that big. She did was write fan fiction, or, like, real person fan fiction in this last season. I'm like, no, but, like, Orange is the New Black is one of those shows where, like, they would be looking at season 2 and not season 3. So just something to keep in mind when you're thinking about, like, the buzz, or, like, if a season was good or not. And like I said, it doesn't pertain to every show, but for some shows it does.
Right. That's a really good
point.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, I do want to say that I'm just still shocked Outlander didn't get any nominations.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, I was pleased for John Hamm to finally get an Emmy.
Too.
I thought that was really nice.
And what was that rolling onto the stage, though?
I think he may have lost his mind for a second there.
Also, I will say, like, as far as standout moments, like, I know that you guys were unenthused about Veep, but I do think it was really cute that Anna Chlumsky, or Chlumsky, however you pronounce her name, she was, like, crying, like, when the writers won for the show.
Aww.
And I just thought that was so sweet because her and Julia Louis-Dreyfus were both, like, tearing up. I'm like, that's so nice to see that, like a show is a team and they are genuinely happy for everybody's win, even if it's, like, production. You know,
What was it? Peter Dinklage started his speech by saying, you know, we're only as good as our writers as well, which was a really nice touch.
Yeah, just
as a writer. Yes, for sure. But that's really nice. And we did have a few listener comments too. Kendra Victoria on Twitter said that she thought Viola Davis used her moment beautifully. And I was very sad that Parks and Rec was completely snubbed, though. The funniest moment was James Corden introducing the accountants. Yeah, I did see that. That was super funny. Emilia as well, who's a longtime follower of Hypeable, says, I'm not happy that Parks and Rec did not win an Emmy for the last season. So a lot of people upset about the Parks and Rec snub, and I think we are definitely right there with you.
Yay, I love our listeners.
Yes, when they agree, you know, always.
Oh yeah, no, only when they agree with me. It's the only time I like anyone.
So moving on from that, we're gonna stay in television for a little bit, and then we're gonna go to movies, and then we're gonna go back to television. So it's all over the place this week. This is kind of fun because it's kind of related. The Hollywood Reporter earlier this week released a very extensive poll, which is just, it's such a good idea, and it's so cool that they have the ability to do this. They've polled over 2,000 industry Hollywood people, like actors and directors and writers and producers, and have asked them to name their one favorite show. So not the best show, but their favorite, and they can only name one, which I thought is just... Because you can always go, oh, well, I like this, and I like this, and I like this. But if you can only name one, what do you pick? And the results came out, and it's a really, really interesting list of shows. So in first place, and we posted this on Hypeable as well, Hollywood's official favorite show is Friends, which a lot of people were immediately like, that's not the best. Brr. But I think, you know, again, when you say favorite, it is different, because if you can only pick one, you tend to go a little bit more emotional, like what has impacted your life the most. And I think it says a lot that the people working in Hollywood right now would have, like, grown up with Friends, or have watched it with their family, or have watched it, like, when they were the same age as these people. So to me, it makes a lot of sense, and I like Friends, so I was happy. And in second place, they had Breaking Bad, which makes sense because it's such a phenomenal show. X-Files was number 3, Game of Thrones number 4, Seinfeld number 5, The Sopranos, Saturday Night Live, I Love Lucy, Mad Men, and The Simpsons rounds up the top 10, and you can read the rest of it over in The Hollywood Reporter. So that's kind of an interesting news story in itself, but I also just thought it would be fun to just really quickly try to list our own number one, and I'm really saying just one favorite show, if we can do it. So I want to know, Pam, what is yours?
I hate you so hard right now.
It's so hard, right?
It's really,
it's
really
like
hard.
Picking between your, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay.
One.
I know.
I could hear you go into a list.
This is so terrible. Oh gosh, it's like I'm torn between two right now. This is so hard.
Just say one.
I know, but it's like it. But I feel like this is like so much is on the line. All right. Well, I recently rewatched this show actually in full, and I think that it still holds up. And there were moments that really resonated with me. So I'll go with that. And I'm just going to go with Gilmore Girls.
Good choice. That's nice. That's a good choice.
Yeah. And I just because specifically, like, I don't know, like, I know that there's some conflict with, like, the tail end of the series as a whole, people not too happy about that stuff. But, you know, for me, like, just really resonated, because I think anybody that has ever, like, not had their, like, 5-year plan pan out the way Rory does towards the end, it's just like, I think those episodes particularly speak to people like that. And I'm including myself in that. So, but yeah, it's just so touching and it's beautiful. And yeah, I'm a pop culture junkie, so I get off on all that. The references on that show and stuff like
cool.
that.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, good choice. And Merima, how about you?
This isn't even difficult, and I'm pretty sure that the Hollywood Reporter has a typo, because they put it in as number 11, but I think they accidentally just put in an extra one, because it obviously should have been the first one, which is obviously The West Wing, which is the greatest TV show ever made, and that is a factual statement. So
okay.
That's a yeah, good one.
I have a lot of favorites, but The West Wing for me, I know there are some people who only consider The West Wing to really be the four seasons that Aaron Sorkin worked on, and I totally get that. It is kind of like two separate shows, but even as a whole, The West Wing has the greatest character ever invented, C.J. Craig, and the runner-up, Josh Lyman, and some of the best episodes ever of TV, and it's so well-written. And, you know, as with everything, it goes up and down, but yes, that has been a love of my life for many years now. And it was actually the 16th anniversary of the first episode just yesterday, or probably today in the States.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't watch it when it first came out. But Pam told a little story, so I guess I'll tell a little story about The West Wing, which was I watched the first season for the first time when I watched it. I actually watched it with my mom, and we watched the whole of the first season, and I don't want to spoil it, but there is a huge cliffhanger at the end of the first season. And we realized we didn't have season 2 on DVD, so and it was like 4:15 or something, and shops closed at 5:30, and so we like raced to the car and broke many laws speeding to the store, and then like we didn't even park. I just remember her like driving by and being like, go, so I like ran to the store and like ran down and bought like the next 3 or 4 seasons so that we wouldn't have this problem again,
because we were like, story ever.
Yeah, if anyone who's seen The West Wing, just imagine watching the season 1 finale and then not having the next episode. I mean, obviously, if you watched it when it aired, but like not having the next episode, knowing that it was out there already, it was just such torture.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So mine, Selena.
Yeah, I know.
So mine is The Vampire Diaries. No, I'm kidding. No shade. mine is number 27. So there's no way I can make that look like a mistake. but. I mean, I thought this question was going to be hard to answer, and then I realized it wasn't hard at all. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, obviously. So there was a vampire in there, I guess. but no diaries. But I mean, really, there's no show that has affected me more, and there's no show that I have rewatched more, and there's no show that I hold to a higher state. It's kind of like, you know, and I think it's funny because Pam, you picked Gilmore Girls and you sort of began defending it a little bit. You were like, oh, I know people have problems, blah, blah, blah. And Buffy certainly is not a perfect show, but I don't think there's such a thing as a perfect show. And I think if you get too perfect, actually, you lose some of the heart of it, because, you know, what made Buffy so special for me, not only that I watched it at a formative age, but also that whatever ridiculous things happened in that show, like whatever ridiculous plot twists and plot, like monsters or whatever, the characters at their core were never compromised by the writers wanting to tell interesting stories or wanting to shock the audience or wanting to raise the bar. Like it was always just the characters reacting exactly how they would react to whatever was happening around them, and you know, and again, when you rewatch it, you sort of see that this, the buildup of every single character in that show, their development makes perfect sense and completely guides the show, even sometimes guides it to weird places. But you know, it and everything they do, there's always consequences. When I reviewed the Slayer book recently for Hypable, Anthony Head made a little introduction. He played Giles, and he said one of the things that he loved about Buffy was that the actors were always asked to keep everything that had happened to their characters in mind when they moved forward so that you could always see on their faces what they had been through. And I just think a lot of shows don't do that. So that's what I love most about Buffy. And I'll spare you guys a long story about all of my crazy Slayer wannabe experiences, because let's just say we don't have time, and not that I'm crazy. But yeah, Buffy for sure. My number one show of all time. And there's
no contest. I love these answers, because those two would be in my top five.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The two that you said, for sure.
Yeah.
Which I'm now trying to work out what that would be. So I'm going to be
top five. I know. Well, actually, top five is like easier, because then I could just think about all
exactly.
The
well, that's why I only wanted you to name one, because top five is super easy, but just one, you're not mentioning anything else. It's really tough. But I think actually it made me sort of happy to realize, yeah, it's Buffy, like no contest, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I was reasoning it too, is like which are the shows that I have gone back to watch right. over again.
Yeah.
Like multiple months.
If your house was on fire, which box set would you say?
You know what's so sad is like I don't have any of the Gilmore Girls seasons on box set. Like the only complete actually
Ben, what is
this,
wrong with you?
I know, and you know what's so funny, and I didn't even pick it, but the only like complete series I have, which you guys could probably guess what it is actually Merlin. I have all five seasons.
Oh, cute.
So that'll be like number five because it came later.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then okay. like all the Boy Meets World, because that's essential.
Right. See, now you're naming new shows. You're cheating. No, we have to move on. Yeah. No more shows.
You chose one. So
yes.
Producing up.
I did. I'm sticking with Gilmore Girls. It's fine.
All right. Before Pam changes her mind, I guess let's move on to some more news. We're jumping over to my favorite movie now from my favorite show. We had a new trailer for Mockingjay Part 2 this week. A little controversial because the trailer features Katniss and Prim, and a lot of it is like old footage from the movies that we've seen, and people thought that it gave away what happens to Prim. And so I have to say I watched it with that in mind. Like I kept waiting for the moment when I thought, as someone who didn't know what was happening, I would watch it and be like, oh no, the movie is spoiled. And I really didn't think that it did. But I don't know if you guys watched it. Do you think that it gave away too much? Because that kind of seems to be the main criticism of it.
I think it only gives away too much because you, like, as a quote-unquote savvy movie watcher, you know that when they pay certain attention to a minor character is because they're gearing you up to feel sorry when something happens to them. We're all, like, dancing around it, like, spoilers. But no, I mean, the trailer itself was fine.
Right. See, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, only because I thought the trailer did a really good job of framing it, not, you know, this is why you should remember who Prim is, but framing it as in this is why Katniss is doing what she's doing, you know.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
I thought that was kind of clever in a way, because even though it's about Katniss and Prim, like they make it so that it's kind of about Katniss.
Yeah.
You know? I thought when I watched it. Anyway, no one's allowed to criticize the Mockingjay publicity campaign if I'm around, obviously.
But you know what? You bring up a really good point, because it for the casual viewer, like you guys were discussing before, all you're going to remember is, oh yeah, like Prim is the thing that got this whole thing in motion. If her name had never come out, then Katniss would have never volunteered and she would have never been in the Hunger Games. She would have lived to see another year. So in that sense, the only reason that people are freaking out is because they've read the book and they know what happens, and
right.
that's fine. But like, you're going to give it away if you're there with a friend that just watches the movies and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. Like,
yeah, chill. That's kind of what I feel it's like. You know, all the people who are complaining are like, oh, I can't believe they gave that away. And it's like, but you have read the book, you know what happens. So yeah.
Right.
Anyway, I don't care. I am just excited because this is happening so soon. I can't wait for this movie.
I know. Awesome. And in a little less exciting news.
That's me. Sorry, my bad. For some reason, I thought we were further up in the dock. Anyway, this kind of sucks if you were really, really looking forward to the Gambit adaptation that's starring Channing Tatum, because it's lost its director. So Rupert Wyatt is no longer involved with the project, which means that this whole thing has kind of taken a step back. And according to The Hollywood Reporter, he stepped down because of a changing of the script that caused the film's budget to be larger than expected. And then it would have extended the shoot, and then that caused the movie to get pushed forward. So it's a lot of just technicalities, it sounds like. And yeah, so he had to exit because of prior commitments. And he actually said that he was looking forward to working on it. But unfortunately, because they pushed back everything, he's not able to commit to the film. So that's pretty much that in a nutshell. Do either of you guys care about this? Is this like a big deal? Because I feel like people are very lukewarm on Gambit, or like they're really excited.
Yeah, the problem with this is what we would like to call, I guess, the Wonder Woman problem. The reason people are, I guess, concerned, if they're really into Gambit, which there is a small portion of, you know, comic fans who are obsessed with Gambit, which personally I don't get, but like to each their own. I may have mentioned this actually when he was attached to the project, is if there's a property that you're really excited to see developed, but it's not a big one, then every time they announce someone, it's like, you take a deep breath and you go, okay, it's happening, because, you know, as many comic book fans will remember, there was this ongoing saga with trying to bring Wonder Woman to screen back in the 90s, even it started. And, you know, people kept being attached to projects and like then they were happening and then, oh no, then it all fell apart. And then someone else was doing it. And even Joss Whedon was going to do it at one point. And, you know, so when they announced the Wonder Woman film and that she was going to be in, you know, Dawn of Justice and all of that, people were really excited every time they announced something to be like, okay, it's actually happening this time. And I feel like the same thing happened with Gambit. But the good news for Gambit is that the film already has a release date. So, you know, I think they should be set, and it doesn't seem like there was any huge drama. I feel like people are more concerned about Channing Tatum's casting than who was going to direct it, really. But, yeah. But yeah, you know, it's already set in their schedule. So I don't think people have to be concerned that this is like a bad sign for the film or anything. It's still very early. So they'll get someone else and it'll be fine.
All right, great. And so this is some, I think, potentially good news for the Mary Poppins movie. Last week we had nothing but bad things to say about it, because why is this happening? Who could possibly replace Julie Andrews? Well, maybe Disney has actually found the one actress who could legitimately replace Julie Andrews and not get too much hate for it. There's a report by Den of Geek, and it is just a report, so nothing is set. But they are saying that Disney is trying to get Emily Blunt for the main role. I saw this and I was like, oh, that's like, that works really well. But I'm curious what you guys think, because I think you're more attached to the original than I am. Would you be happy with this? Would this make it okay? Or will nothing make it okay?
Nothing makes it okay.
I was going to say, nobody's going to be better than Julie. That's the problem. It's like the same.
I know, but seeing that it's happening.
Yeah, I guess. With stuff like this that's really close to my heart, the same thing happens every time they try to remake Wizard of Oz, to be honest with you guys. I just kind of wait and hold my tongue until I see the adaptation. And then if it works out, it works out. And I just will swallow every bad thing I ever thought to myself. Uh-huh.
But I just mean there's a far cry from James Franco to Emily Blunt.
That's true. But I'm talking not necessarily about like the great and powerful Oz, but I don't know if you guys know this. This is like kind of off topic, but for a while they were going to do the Judy Garland story starring Anne Hathaway, and Judy Garland is, you know, pretty much the Wizard of Oz. So that's something that like I was a little tingy about, I guess, and it would be the same thing as Emily Blunt or anybody really trying to step into the shoes of the great Julie Andrews.
So you don't think that Emily Blunt would do a good job, or that she would be?
The thing is that I really like Emily Blunt. I thought she did a good job in Into the Woods. I actually really liked Into the Woods, even though, you know, many people didn't. Whatever. I thought she did a good job in that. I feel like the bar is set so high that it kind of doesn't matter who they cast. The only thing people are going to be doing, and it's very good, Selena, that you're able to separate it, but like definitely in Australia, and I imagine it's the same in America, Mary Poppins is very firmly entrenched, and Mary Poppins is Julie Andrews. And, you know, it's going to be difficult for people to separate that without comparing everything that whoever plays this character does to how Julie Andrews played the character. And so it's not that Emily Blunt is going to do a bad job. In fact, I don't think I've seen her do anything that I didn't like. I love her in everything I've seen her in.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of the bar is set to impossible in a way. There is no way for her to even meet expectations kind of thing. But
that's interesting. I guess I'm
more interested to see what they do with the plot. And, you know, in a way, the reason I feel a little like weird about this is not as much to do with the casting as it is to do with like the wishes of the author, which was to not have more Mary Poppins movies. So yeah, I think it's a complicated situation. Mm. As objectively, Emily Blunt, I think she's a really good choice. Like, that's a very smart decision if they get her on board for it.
It certainly is, because I know for me, and again, you know, I'm speaking as sort of the, I think the medium audience, I love the movie, but it's not, I mean, I'm so used to the remake news that it doesn't faze me. Like, we talked about this last week, you know, it doesn't faze me one bit that they're redoing this. I'm just like, fine, whatever, I'm probably not going to watch it unless it's, you know. But when I saw Emily Blunt's name, it was like this switch. I was like, oh, okay. Like it was probably the one name they could have announced. Emily Blunt is probably the one person that I wouldn't be upset by. Like, almost no matter who else they would have said, I would have been like, no, she's not good enough. But she's actually, that's just what I wanted to say, that that's probably the only person for me.
If it's charming, then I, like I said, I'll just be like, oh, I'm worried for no reason. Like, because you have like the stage play, Mary Poppins has been on Broadway for a really long time, and I've seen that, and it's beautifully done. So I'm sure, you know, she might do a great job and it would be great. But it's just, when you just think about it in black and white, it's like, oh, somebody is going to be the next Julie Andrews attempt to be the next Julie Andrews. It's hard to stomach.
Time moves past. We have to, I know.
Let's move on to happier news, I guess.
Speaking of time.
Oh, time's moving. Okay, let's talk about, I guess, original movies now for once. The Good Dinosaur trailer. We actually had them speak. I guess people aren't excited about this, but no. I'm so excited about this because it's like a dinosaur Lion King, basically, is how I'm imagining it now after seeing this trailer. I think that this looks so cute, and it definitely looks like the kind of Pixar movie that's going to rip your heart out a la Up. So that will be great for those of us who, you know, don't have emotions and definitely didn't cry in Up like 1,000 times. Yeah, I just think this is really cute. And, you know, the first trailer we got was beautiful, but, like, they didn't say anything. And so everyone was like, are they going to talk? Or, like, how is this going to work? So, yes, we got a very, very short trailer. Got a little bit of some of the people. I don't know. Are you guys on, like, Team Dinosaur or not? Because I didn't realize that there was so much indifference, I guess, to this project.
I thought the trailer was so cute. Like the first one, the teaser where, you know, you have the asteroid and it gets knocked away. I was like, oh, that's cute. It's fun. And it's always fun to explore, like you said, new ideas. And I watch most Pixar movies, like 99%. So
I feel like this is a good time to say that I'm obsessed with Pixar movies. Like I don't do Disney and like you know, I like animated movies, but I'm not so into DreamWorks. But Pixar is where it's at. I love Pixar movies.
But I know you mentioned like that people were like, are they going to speak or not? And I'm wondering if maybe I know there was a reshuffling with the voice actors that were tied to this project. Like they almost completely revamped the cast. So it would make sense, I guess, that it took a while for us to see some lines in these trailers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it looks very cute. And I kind of like the twist that's in this trailer, which is like all the dinosaurs talk, but the human kid doesn't talk. He just like growls at people.
And this is why I'm not going to see this movie, because I've said before, there's nothing creeps me out more than people like acting like animals. I don't know why. It's like a thing for me.
Even more than scurvy?
Oh, no. Actually, I can't believe you remember that. Yes, my irrational fear of scurvy. Okay, so there's two things. But yeah, I don't know what it is. Yeah,
like
it's way. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay, tell me later.
I read Cider House Rules once, and it like just freaked me out. But it's so like every time I see it, I'm like the boy being like a dog. I'm like, ugh. I don't know what it is. No. It creeps me out so much. But I'm sure the movie's fantastic, and Pixar is great. So.
Well, I will report back because I will be seeing it at least 100 times.
Great.
And if I like it, then I'll see it again.
Okay.
So 101 for Merima.
Yeah.
Moving on from really cute news to kind of more serious drama stuff in the cinematic realm, Sam Smith actually released a 15-second preview of his Spectre single called Writings on the Wall. He did this really, really early Tuesday morning via Twitter, and there's not really much to go by because, of course, it's 15 seconds, but it's got a really swanky and sultry vibe, so... So far, I guess if you're thinking about the themes in Bond, it tends to fit really well with what you would expect because Bond in and of itself is very swanky and sultry. So, yeah, I think I'm just excited for like 4 days from now when the song is actually released because
It's out Friday.
I'm really excited. Yeah,
oh,
that's so weird.
Me too.
Because the what do you call it? Like the music industry now, everything's coming out on Friday. And so like I'm so like discombobulated because I'm like, wait. Lana Del Rey's album came out? What? It's Saturday. No, it's Friday. Friday is the new release date. So yeah, so that'll be really exciting. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that next week.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Definitely.
And moving back to television for a little bit, for a spell, you know, the big news sort of that broke this week was that Jenna Coleman is leaving Doctor Who this season. She, of course, plays the companion Clara. And you know what? The biggest part of the story has nothing to do with the story itself. It is actually just singing the praise of Donya, who was on the show last week. It was, I think it was Monday morning. Is that right? With the time, 18th? No, it was Friday. I don't know. It was a day of the week. And I was writing news in the morning. And Donya, she writes to me. She sends me like five like audio files. And I'm like, what is this? What's like, what are you doing? This is weird. So I just keep writing. And she's like, check your thing. And I'm like, fine. And it turns out she's been recording the radio where Jenna Coleman made the announcement live. So Hypeable actually had like the announcement up and the direct quotes like half an hour before BBC itself, which means nothing.
The world exclusive.
Right, right. Oh. It was. And like it means absolutely nothing, but it was cool to us. So we were super excited about that. But for the news itself, though, I mean, Jenna Coleman has been on the show. I think this is her third year that she's entering. I know for me personally, I have nothing against her, but I am so ready for her to leave, and I am not watching Doctor Who at the moment, and I might actually start watching when she's gone because I never thought her character clicked right with either of the Doctors. And I really, like, I like Peter Capaldi, but I thought Clara was really just a nothing presence. Like, if that makes sense, like, it's not, again, it's not her, it's not the actress, it's the character. I don't think... There was so much they could have done with her, all of the different versions of her throughout time, and she's just kind of, like, there to quip at the Doctor and to, like, be a badass. And I'm like, but I don't care. So I'm so ready for her to go, and she's got a new show on ITV where she's going to be playing Queen Victoria, which I'm probably going to check out. So this is good news to me.
I would agree with you, although I would place the blame very squarely for her just non-existent characterization.
Right. Because it has nothing to do with her. She's great, but she can't do something that isn't there in the script.
Exactly. And I haven't been watching... I actually did watch this week's, but we'll talk about that later. But I haven't been watching the most recent seasons. But I did watch Clara when she first started out. And, you know, the reason I think that she is such a boring character because there's nothing for her to do is because she was written basically as a plot point.
Yeah,
she was written
exactly.
as a prop to... be the answer to the problem that the writers created. And then once that problem was fixed, like there wasn't really, she didn't have a character. There wasn't anything for her to do. So I think that's become probably more and more evident. Doesn't seem like anyone, again, Jenna Coleman, I think is really great and I would like to see her new show. But as far as the role of Clara, it's always been a kind of nothing role. Mm. And it's a shame because I actually really liked the first two, her first two appearances where she was like the Dalek and then she was in the Victorian London. Those were fantastic, but that's because she had like an actual character to play. And then when she turned into this character, it was just super boring.
That's why I have hope because I think, you know, out of the two of us, I am more lenient of Stephen Moffat than you are. Not by much, but I think it's not hard to be. And I think, you know, for me, and again, we have thoughts on this and we sort of disagree here, but someone like Amy, for example, I thought Amy was fantastic. And I don't think it's that they can't write a good companion. I think it's just they got in, like you said, they got in wrong with Clara, and she just has no defining, like, she doesn't lead the story like the previous companions have done, and that just makes her completely pointless. So I have hope that with a fresh perspective, you know, with a fresh companion sort of feeding new energy into Peter Capaldi, who is already, I think, doing a fantastic job, that will inspire them to tell better stories. And I'll be looking forward to seeing that. Pam, do you have thoughts, or do you want to move on to...
Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm not really caught up on the show, but I know the episodes you guys are talking about, the first ones that she was in, and they were interesting, but I just kind of, I had my own reasons for falling off the Doctor Who bandwagon, which I'm not going to get into here. But yeah, I mean, like, with companions, like, I feel like they're either hit or miss for me. Like, I enjoyed Amy as well. I loved Donna, but, like, wasn't really big on Martha. So no. I think just every once in a while, like, somebody's not going to be a hit with you. And I know that people do like Clara and some people don't. So, but if anything, maybe this is going to be a nice little rejuvenation for the show, for people that maybe, like, it was lacking because they were not into the companion. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it purely from, like, the fan perspective. Because I'm not caught up, so I wouldn't be watching, but moving on from that, we do have one more bit of TV news before we move on to other things. We got a really interesting quote from the Once Upon a Time showrunners, Adam and Eddie. This is actually from an event that Kyle attended, and unfortunately he's not here to talk about it, but he went to a Q&A and a premiere screening for season 5, which I'm super jealous about.
And he got cupcakes, guys.
And he got cupcakes, and he was like, too bad none of my hypeable, like, writers live anywhere near me. And I'm like, thanks, Kyle. I'm literally like 30 minutes away. Anyway,
wow.
But more importantly, during the Q&A after the screener, the showrunners mentioned that they would be interested in introducing an LGBTQ character into the show, which is actually kind of a big deal, especially for people that have been reading a lot into the relationship between Awara and Mulan, which we saw in season 4. So this is what they had to say there. Kid has said, I would say that we know the LGBTQ community are big supporters of the show, and we'd love to be able to tell a story that reflects that. And then Horowitz went on to say, we want the show to reflect the world as it is now. Whether that's going to be with any particular character, we're not going to say, and it's something we want to do this year. It's something we think is very important to do on the show because this is the world we live in. So it looks like we might get our first LGBTQ ship that is canon on Once Upon a Time, which is kind of
insert
cool.
Slow clap here, like,
right,
okay, where was this
Mulan
5
was
seasons ago,
like, canon?
Yeah, she's already canon. I don't know if she's lesbian, but she's definitely shown interest in Aurora. She was right. Like,
he
kind
also,
of her true love, I think.
Interest in Prince Philip, though, like, in the beginning, kind of, I guess.
No, I think that was a red herring.
Oh, was it a red
herring?
Yeah,
I think it was meant to be.
Really, I wasn't watching the show as well as some people.
No.
On this.
And I don't even watch it. Why do I know this?
I think, but okay, and also, you know, hashtag Swan Queen. Hello, shout out.
Yeah. You're best fan.
Oh, I don't know. I feel so bad about it. I was sick, so.
But overall, this is just, I mean, it's cool to see because this is something that wouldn't have happened even like, you know, 5 years ago.
But you know what, that
like
just
that,
annoys me. And I know it's not that I'm like not going like, yay, you know, good for you, but I'm a little bit bitter about Once Upon a Time in general, because I think it's, yeah, we don't have to get into that. I'm not watching it anymore, but I was. But it's just them saying, yes, we have an LGBTQ fan base and we want to include them, blah, blah, blah. Like, come on, dude, you're in season 5. Like, this is ridiculous. If you wanted to, and there would be more than one. It's like they're doing this, like, look, we're doing one storyline for you. It's the whole, like, what's it called? Like, token thing?
The tokenism.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, here's a token thing. Keep watching our show. Yay, pat on the back. Like, no, come on, dude.
Right.
Like, it's to me, this is not something that, I mean, it's great and it's good that you bring it up, but I just think applauding it is just wrong. Like, they should have done this 5 years ago or 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, it gets to the point where it's like, you get sick of congratulating people for doing less than they should have done in the first place.
Right, exactly. You know,
like, they should have incorporated all various perspectives from the beginning. Again, like, I don't watch Once Upon a Time, but just generally. Obviously, this is good that they're doing right. it, but yeah, it does get a little tiring, I suppose. We shall see how that plays out, I guess. We don't even know.
Again, you know, I can't help but compare it to something like The 100, which just did it. Just ran, like, it was just a thing that happened, and then suddenly it was a thing, and they was like, wow, that makes perfect sense, and no one needed to, like, announce it and be like, be happy that we are doing this for you. I don't know. Mm. It's a, yeah, you can think whatever you want, but great. And people are speculating that maybe, because Mulan is coming back this season, that maybe she'll have a romance with Merida from Brave, who's Merida. Also being introduced. That's sort of the popular theory. So
that's fun.
Yeah, why not? We'll have to wait and see.
More Mulan. I don't even watch the show, but
I love
Mulan
her so much. She's such a great character. Yeah.
All right, so we'll wrap up, as always, apparently, with Harry Potter news.
Yay.
R.I.P. Dream Pumpkin. The Pottermore accounts no longer exist, so I hope you guys weren't attached to your username or your identity collected. Or all of your house points or anything, because...
Or your sorting, because apparently that's gone out the window too.
Yeah, none of those things exist anymore. Pottermore has totally relaunched, as we were talking about last time. The changeover has happened. It's definitely much easier to navigate the site now. Like, you can go through and find the various information. That said, I do get the feeling that the people who designed Pottermore really, like... I don't know if the site is cursed or, like, the people who work on it are incompetent or, like, what happens. But, you know, even I was trying to find things on this to talk about. And, you know, it's easier than it was, but it's still not easy to find things. They have this weird search function where you have to know exactly what you're looking for. And then you type it in and then it searches. The other great thing about the Pottermore changeover, well, there was actually one good thing, which was to launch it. J.K. Rowling wrote this quite lengthy history of the Potters, which people were very interested in. So we found out about James's parents, and we found out how they made all their money. Like, turns out they were, you know, quite good on the business side, the Potters. They invented, like, all these potions and things, which was cool. But the other thing, apparently, is that there's this Pottermore correspondent or Pottermore something who now runs the site, and I'm assuming they're a BuzzFeed transplant, because here are some of the articles that I can see. 11 times Snape was the hardest teacher to please. And what about this one? 15 times Harry ruined the Dursleys' day. And oh no, wait, I found a better one. 8 of Draco Malfoy's meanest muggle mockeries. Like, this is what's happening at Pottermore
this
right now.
This is like textbook BuzzFeed stuff.
Yeah,
really bad.
Which is hilarious to me. They do have a lot of 9 times when muggles were oblivious to magic. And let me
just point out, what's with the times?
if you click on any of these, it's just a list of stuff with, like, a headline and then just quotes from the book. You know, that's what you get, which I think is hilarious and also terrible, which again tells me that the people who are making this have no idea what they're doing. That said, there are a lot of, I guess there's going to be a lot more information. It's easy to find all of the stuff J.K. Rowling's written, which is good. You can go and find that. But some of the things that were on Pottermore previously seem to be missing. In terms of her writing those Quidditch World Cup articles that came out last year or the year before. No, last year, I think, where, like, Ginny was writing and Rita Skeeter was writing. Those don't seem to be on the site. And as Pam said, the Sorting Hat quiz is no longer there, but apparently that's coming back with a Patronus quiz eventually. It's not like they didn't have an opportunity to do that when they did Prisoner of Azkaban, but whatever. And I guess the other big change is that rather than on the old Pottermore, there were all of the illustrations, this Pottermore is covered in pictures from the movies. So it's totally integrated now, which I do not like.
That's so funny, because they have this guy that's illustrating all of the books. So you would think they would have at least put, maybe they'll transfer them out when the books start coming out.
No, so if you, well, no, because what happens is, like, for example, if you go to, like, Harry Potter, if you search Harry Potter and you go to his profile, You see not only like illustrations of him, some of the illustrations from the old Pottermore, I think. I didn't like go through it all, so I don't know. And then you see some of J.K. Rowling's writing, and then you just see these pictures of Daniel Radcliffe just that say like film still, as if we don't know what they're from. And then you see eight adorable Harry and Ginny moments. Like, what is happening on this site? It's ridiculous.
Well, I guess the important thing is that we now can find all of J.K. Rowling's contributions.
Yeah, because that's all we want.
The Potter origin story was fun, though. Welcome like,
to- oh, Jesus! I'm sorry, I accidentally played her intro message in my ears. Sorry.
I was like, no, Jesus is not on Pottermore.
That's my new username.
No, you know what, Pam? The Potter origin story was really nice, but it just made me really sad because, like, that is the exact content that I want in an encyclopedia, in a book, in my hand, that I don't need to search a stupid website
yet. I just want like, the those encyclopedia. Kinds
of that's what I imagine would be in an encyclopedia like that.
Yeah.
You know, all of that information. And that's what I
like,
want.
That's what I feel like I don't want to read, because that's exactly why I have this, like, this like aversion to all the Pottermore info, because it feels like spoilers for the encyclopedia, like, you know, because I'm still like in my mind it's
I'm
still happening
to you.
no but what I'm saying is in my mind it still feels like the encyclopedia has to be coming because I want it so badly, and every time I see this like stupid like whatever names of their parents, I'm like, I don't want it this way, I want it in the book, because when I read it this way it feels cheap and it feels wrong and it feels like random fan fiction. But if I read it in the book, it would feel official and it would feel like a real canon and something I could taken and hold and be like, this is canon, wow, you know. So I don't,
it's funny how the medium changes it so much
it
for
does,
you, but I
yeah.
I totally get that. Yeah,
no,
it's interesting,
you know. That's true though, because I was thinking about this the other day. We were talking about this book that this author is writing and the perspective of the male character, because the original comes in the female character's voice.
Midnight Sun.
And yes, but not. It's actually a Jennifer L.
50 Shades of Grey
book called the Lux series. But it's funny because she justified only releasing the first book in his perspective in physical form by saying that it would just be too much money to print all of them, even though she's releasing three different books in his perspective. And I just thought that was so funny, because it's something that, like, it doesn't matter. Like, same with Pottermore. If you're a fan of something, it doesn't matter how much money it is or, like, how long it is or whatever. Like, if you build it, they will come, right? So.
Yeah, we even go on stupid Pottermore because we like Harry Potter that much. Like, that says something.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, when we interview her, you know, we'll have to ask her.
Sure. Yeah. Put it on the list.
Yeah.
Joe, inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing they said on Pottermore that people are asking is apparently Lavender Brown is dead. Pottermore says that she's presumably dead.
That's sad.
Well, but they never say that. Yeah, they didn't say that. No, she's like, she's, oh God.
She dies in the book, in the movie, and that's why people thought.
Oh, maybe that's why.
Yeah. No, in the book, she's like seen with Greyback or something, but when Harry's listing all of the people that have died at the end, like, he doesn't include her, you know? He talks about, like, Colin Creevy and stuff, but he doesn't talk about her.
I just assume that she died of complications and not that she lived to be half werewolf, like.
Right.
Phil,
well,
not, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway,
that's sad.
So, yes. So who knows? Maybe Pottermore will give us more stunning revelations like that. We will keep you updated.
Yes. Ugh, I wish.
I mean, if not, you're going to have a list to look forward to.
Oh,
yay.
God, I can't wait.
The next one's going to be like,
Hermione's hair was out of control.
I was going to say, 10 times Harry Hermione was actually more canon than you guys thought.
When can I write the 14 most ridiculous articles you won't believe were published on Pottermore?
Oh, my God, do it. That's crazy.
5 minutes ago.
Yes. So that wraps up the news, so you can go write it in a bit, and we'll look forward to that. But we do just want to mention one last story before we move on, which is, we didn't really talk about it, but Pacific Rim 2, which I know a lot of people are really excited about, has been delayed indefinitely, unfortunately. And although there is hope, because director Guillermo del Toro does say that he expects it to come around again at some point, even though... Like, it was originally set for 2020, what worse numbers 2017, but now we don't know when it's coming out, if it's coming out, but just don't give up hope yet, because the director has hope, and that's all I wanted to say about that. Moving on now to TV show of the week. I know both of you have watched shows this week. Pam, what have you been watching?
So I talked a little bit about Taraji P. Henson when we were talking about the Emmys, and I had been marathoning the first season of Empire since the beginning of this month. So I'm finally all caught up, which is good because the season 2 premiere actually airs tomorrow night or tonight, depending on where you are. Sometime on Wednesday, the 23rd. Let's just go with that. But yeah, this show totally lives up to like all the hype that you have read about on Twitter and stuff like that. And it's just really interesting to me, being so invested in the music business industry, how the writers go about formulating plot points for this show, because a lot of it actually reflects hot button issues that are going on in the music industry today. And they're going to do the same with season 2. And the cast is just wonderful. The issues that the family faces are just really intriguing. You see a lot of the gritty side of the industry, and yeah, it's just really well done. And if you're gonna watch for anything, just watch for like Taraji P. Henson, because she's so good in this show and she's wonderful. And yeah, I've been really enjoying that, so I would highly suggest checking out at least the pilot. And it's actually all on Hulu right now, so you can watch all 12 episodes like whenever you want.
Awesome.
Also, Selena, you should watch that because the showrunner is Danny Strong, who was Jonathan in Buffy.
Oh, really?
And he was Doyle in Gilmore Girls.
And he wrote Mockingjay, right? One of them, yeah.
Mockingjay Paul. Yeah.
Cool.
He does everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I watched Doctor Who this week, surprising myself and probably other people. I haven't watched about 3 seasons or something now, but I thought I will try it out again because everyone was saying that the premiere episode was a lot better than the previous season had been in terms of the characterization of the Doctor. And I didn't hate it. It wasn't the best episode. Well, it wasn't the best episode of Doctor Who I'd ever seen, but like my previous experience with Doctor Who was that I disliked it to the point that I stopped watching a show that I had loved for most of my life. So, you know, I was not in a great place with it. And I watched it, and, you know, I quite liked it. That said, it was a 2-part episode, and a lot of my feelings about how good this episode are going to depend on how it is wrapped up. But I definitely liked Missy a lot. I really liked that character. I liked what we saw of Capaldi's Doctor. I thought that was a lot better than I had remembered him being. And, you know, Clara was all right, too. So, yeah, I will watch the next episode, and I'm going to give it a few episodes. I'll give the season a few episodes, and then I'll decide if it's worth like keeping up with or not. But I'm definitely not watching the ones that I missed out on.
Okay.
Yeah. No
That's
way.
That's fair. Are you watching Mindy Project as well?
Yes. Also Mindy Project. This is awesome. Okay. Prepare for a lot of stress in this TV show of the week section going forward, because usually I have nothing to put in it, and during like September and October, every show that I watch returns to air, and so I forget that they all exist. And
yeah.
Yes, I watched the Mindy Project return. I haven't seen the second episode that just aired, but
we might have to cut it down to a show a week again when the season starts up, so we don't end up just spending the whole show on that.
I think so, yeah. Well, we'll do Hot on Hypeable then, I guess. We'll keep with the Doctor Who theme. Here are some fun things that have been on Hypeable this week. We had a Doctor Who quiz from Kyle in time for the first episode. This was really fun. It's like interior design meets pop culture. You can see what your TARDIS would look like on the inside. Mine was minimalistic chic, I think, which is, as everyone knows, I'm such a minimalist. So that definitely makes sense. But
mine was something colorful madness or something like that. I don't remember.
They
fit really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a fun one. We actually had a lot of fun stuff on Hypeable this week. We had how to throw a party according to 5 different Lord of the Rings races. This was from Katie, because it was Frodo and Bilbo's birthday.
Yay.
Happy birthday. Share birthday. So we had this kind of, it's very funny, this article. I enjoyed it a lot. So it basically says, if you're an elf, this is how you should celebrate. And and she's got it a lot of different groups. The human one is particularly funny, but I won't ruin it for you. You'll have to go and read it. And Katie was actually also at the Toronto Film Festival for us in the past week, and she got to talk to the Heroes Reborn cast. So that is also up on Hyperbole. She got to talk to a lot of about like possible characters that could return or who they would like to return. You know, some of them are big fans of Heroes and some of them are not, but the interviews are a lot of fun. She got to talk to them for quite a while, so definitely check that out. And then, because, you know, this isn't an autocracy, no matter how much I would like it to be, Selena wrote an article about How I Met Your Mother that,
yay,
whatever, which is a very well-written, well-reasoned, well articulated argument that I 100% disagree with.
That you hate.
No, I actually agree with the article. The article is why Ted had to end up with Robin for the show to make sense. And I do agree with that, but I still think that it was a bad decision. So that's a really good article.
Well, like 60,000 people would say otherwise. No, we had some, you know what's so cool about this article?
Huh? Didn't say yes.
No, exactly. What's so cool about this article is that people obviously have very, very, very strong feelings about the How I Met Your Mother finale, but everyone's like really articulate in the comments. Like, there was no, I was expecting so much hate for this, but people, like, whether they agree or disagree or like only partly agree, they're all coming with these really long, like, exciting and interesting comments and being like, I don't know, I've never seen an article that was contentious, like, be so, like, people are not throwing fits in the comments, and that makes me really happy. So that's cool.
No, the same thing actually happened when the finale aired. Like, people thought a lot about it and felt, like you said, felt very strongly about it. But, like, for, I mean, you know, there was like 9 seasons. There was a lot to talk about. So you can go and read that, and then I'll be casually raging about it on Twitter. Just kidding.
Which is fair.
Okay, and then I guess more retrospective things. We had an ode to Hermione Granger because it was her birthday. So that's nice. Ariana wrote this, wonderful Ariana. And it is an ode to Hermione and to the brilliance of Bossy Pants Girls, which I liked a lot.
Yeah, so me too.
we could all get behind that.
Yeah.
And then just keeping up with the female theme, we also had a really fun article from Danielle with some comic book recommendations for comics that focus on female characters. You know, obviously there are some that you might know from their appearances in film and TV shows, but there is obviously a lot more. And so she's got a really cool list on hyperbole.com. You can check that out. And all of these and lots more, as always.
Awesome. Really cool. I really like that last one. I'm going to check it out for sure. And rounding off the show now with listener feedback, we have a few comments this week. Thank you, by the way, for all your comments on the Merlin special. We are really, really glad you guys enjoyed it. We got some really positive responses from that. As for our comments on last week's normal show, our first comment comes from Stephanie. And Pam, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Stephanie says, I didn't realize it until you guys discussed the casting, but I imagined Artemis as Astrid from How to Train Your Dragon. I get behind that.
This is, of course, Ready Player
now
One.
I do as well.
Yes. I saw that. Perfect. I was like, it's perfect. Yeah, for sure. That was really cool. And Cassie says, just watched episodes 2 and 3 of Fear of the Walking Dead. Definitely got better. Definitely worth watching them. So that's to me, because I still haven't watched episode 2. I suck at this, guys, this TV watching thing. I don't know what went wrong. Okay.
It's really hard to watch
since
TV.
I started writing so many movie news. Like, I have to actually watch movies, and I don't have time for TV. It's terrible.
You know what? Somebody asked me today, they're like, how do you watch this much TV and still have a life? And I'm right. Just like, magic. It's right. I don't even know.
She has a time turner.
It's not a good day I can get through 3 TV shows, but that's like between the gym and all that stuff. But anyway,
nice.
It's hard, you guys.
I get it. Did you want me to get this last one? Allison said, I saw Scotch Trials this weekend and I really, really enjoyed it. I really appreciate everything that Wes Ball and the cast has put into adapting one of my favorite series, and I trust his vision in finishing the series. Did we talk about Scotch Trials?
We didn't at all. Has anyone seen that?
I saw it. I wanted to talk about it, but I also had the James Bond stuff, so I was like, this is too much.
Oh, Pam, did you like it?
I did, but okay, so this is what is troublesome to me. I feel like I need to go back and reread the book because it has been a while, but I feel like they changed a lot. Not necessarily that it was bad, but I just got really discombobulated in the beginning because I wasn't expecting them to start where they did. Does that make sense?
I've heard they definitely changed a lot. That's why I need to go and see it because I really like the first Maze Runner.
They did
movie.
A really good job with just the typography of the Scorch and the cranks in this. Like, it was just really well done. So I really enjoyed it as well. It's a really nice continuation to, continuation of the first film. And I'm excited to see what they do with the third one for sure.
Cool. And just to finish Allison's comment, she said, secondly, I finished The Martian this weekend and I thought it was incredible. Your hype book recommendations have yet to lead me wrong. So keep them coming.
Awesome.
I accept this challenge.
Yes. Yeah, that's really cool.
We'll have to do something. The Martian. I don't know. I'm in a breakup with Matt Damon at the moment. So,
but you know, there's other actors in The Martian that is worth watching for.
True.
I actually we have the I think The Martian comes out the beginning of next month for me, so I have to wait a little bit, but we should definitely try to get something together if we all have watched it and want to talk about it. And I just want to bring this in at the end. I'll put this in the show notes too. I think this should just go everywhere. I got an email to my, speaking of The Martian, I got an email to my Hypeable email. There was no text. There was nothing. It was from Phoebe was the name. And it was just a picture of freaking Sebastian Stan.
Looking, it's a beautiful picture.
Selena, I don't know why you're sad picture. About this. This is like the dream.
I'm not sad, but I think it's slightly creepy.
What about me? You could have sent me pictures of Natalie Dormer. You could have sent me pictures of Ben Whishaw. You could have sent me prior to last week pictures of Matt Damon. Like, guys.
I totally agree because I didn't get any attractive boys in
Pam, I'll send you a picture of Ben Whishaw.
I will send you a picture of Ben Whishaw. And you can add like Dylan O'Brien to the list.
Yeah, you're getting an insight into Pam and my conversations.
Pretty much all day, every day.
This is great, Selena. You're living the dream.
I think it's bizarre. I think it's weird that, like, all the stuff we talk about on this podcast and, like, all the intelligent-ish things that I say, and this is what someone has decided is, like, my thing, is, like, Sebastian Stan, which I'm perfectly fine with, but it is a little bit weird. I was thinking, great, I am not the serious journalist that I thought I was. But I'm okay with that, actually.
Talking about him a lot, like, on recent episodes.
Two times or three.
No,
like,
more than
come
that.
Up recently.
It's not my fault he's doing stuff that we're talking about. He's everywhere.
He's
in The Martian, he's in Ricky and the Flash, he's in the, I was going to say The Hobbit, that's not right, in Captain America. Why did I get those wrong? But yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's he's right there. And now he's also in my email. So thank you, Phoebe. I appreciate it. And you have to send Merriman and Pam something too. They just gave you lots of recommendations for that.
We're not even mildly offended.
No, we're just waiting.
Anytime. I'm sitting by my inbox.
So, but that's a good place to end the show, I think, just with a picture of Sebastian Stan looking into the distance, like we are looking into the distance. And we'll be back next week for another regular episode. Hopefully Kyle will finally join us because he's been kind of gone, kind of AWOL for the past couple of weeks. He's too busy with real life. It's kind of like annoying. Who needs that, right? In the meantime, if you want to send us listener feedback and or pictures of actors that you think we will enjoy, you can do that on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can go on Twitter at hypablehype. And you can find us on Instagram at hypablehype. So we hope to hear from you. Until next week, my name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I was Dream Pumpkin, but I am dead. Thanks, Pottermore.
That's sad.
R.I.P. me.
Yes, R.I.P.
Because I know that you didn't even like them ending up together, Selena.
No, I didn't, but I, like, I don't...
Like, I... Oh, fuck, what is... Oh, Siri.
A new podcast host.
I had my elbow on my phone and Siri just thought that whole thing was a question.